what you're about to hear is an incoherent mess. Hello and welcome to yet another episode of The Masked Podcasters. Who are these glitches coming at you through the magic of podcasting? My name is Shannon, and as usual, joined here by my brother Jake.
Shane, we're all just cogs in the proverbial machine, aren't we, Shane?
Well,
we're all just glitches of the matrix.
Let me just tell you something. I've recently been encouraging new people to listen to the podcast, and often people come to me and they say, "Well, what episode should I start on? You've done so many." Mm-hmm. They've all been so well regarded.
Yes,
you know, it's so like
they're all diamonds in the rough. They're all,
it's like
amazing
asking
work of art.
Quentin Tarantino which movie to start with. They're all masterpieces in their own ways.
Yes,
and I always say to somebody, start with The Shawshank Redemption. I think it's episode 25.
It is. Yep.
Listen to that episode. I thought, you know, we're just going to rehash old bullshit today, so I thought I'll rehash some of my old bullshit. Yeah. I'll listen to some of that pod. I'll listen to that podcast. Why did I talk so fast? Where was I rushing to? What was I doing?
You were in a major rush through the whole, probably the first, I reckon, 30 episodes. You were in a rush.
Every intro is like, "Hello, welcome to the Masked Podcast." What has happened? Are we just older? No. Are we just more bedraggled? What's happened?
Do you know what? It's amazing. I actually listened to that episode today as well, which is weird. I was listening to the intro and see how much the intro had changed. And it's changed quite a bit, which we've had the same intro now for, what, 4 years, because I'm just too lazy.
You've just stopped changing it. Yeah, you used to do them all the time.
I'm like, I'll change it every couple of months. No. This one's been here for 4 years. But
yeah,
you are right. You did talk ridiculously fast.
I don't know why I was in such a rush. But you know, maybe time has caught up with us.
Maybe it was nerves. You were still nervous about recording. It's only 25 episodes in.
I think that was the performance I was putting on. Now I don't care if these go for 487 minutes. You'll listen to every damn word I have to say. It's fine. But I tell that story only to waste a little bit of time, so that you get some semblance of how I felt watching the movie we're covering tonight. As Jake alluded to, and as we talked in the intro, we're talking about the new Matrix. It's irrelevant what it's called. It's now just called Matrix 4 for our purposes.
That's what I named it, you know, in our little
it's
breakdown.
It technically has a name. Does it matter? Where do I start?
I hope
you will give us a synopsis, because I don't think I can.
I don't want to. Basically, Morpheus. Let's start from the start. Neo is brought back from his reality. He's a computer programmer. And what this new Matrix has done is it's made as if the old Matrix that we know and love was a video game designed by Thomas Anderson, the game programmer, so that if anyone goes, "Oh, we're in a simulation," they can turn around and say, "Oh yeah, like that video game that you made." And we're in a new world where Agent Smith and Morpheus are combined, and there's a new group of young hotshot pilots who are trying to free people from the Matrix. And there's an analyst, which is Neil Patrick Harris, who's basically the architect behind the whole thing, but he's posing as Neo's psychologist. Basically, it's a rehash of the first movie, getting Neo out of the Matrix with so many winks and nods and callbacks and references to the old movie. You know, Jada Pinkett Smith's back as Niobe, creating a brand new Ion, or basically another bloody, where were they going in the first movie?
Zion,
another one of those, but a perfect, basically they've just merged machines and Matrix world together, and it's a really big mind fuck of a movie. basically. It's, how do you explain the synopsis? I can't even be bothered with it, really. That's about all. That's all you're gonna get.
Look, yada yada, robots and humans living, working together. I mean, none of this makes sense. It makes less sense than the original Matrix, which I will put it on the record here. The original Matrix is a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. The Wachowskis have slowly disassembled that universe to a point where it's just a loud, noisy CGI mess. And this is the last bastion of that where, okay, let me just, I'm going to talk about the elephant in the room first off, because this might seem unkind, and I want to qualify these comments slightly by saying that Keanu Reeves is very good in very particular circumstances where he doesn't have to do a lot of work.
Yes.
He doesn't have to carry a movie with his acting chops. You know, you might, you know, glance at your phone or look at your radio dial and think, Shannon, what about John Wick? I would say, unnamed audience member, first of all, shut up. This is my podcast. Second of all, he doesn't have to do anything in John Wick. No. He says very little. He has basically no dialogue. And all he has to do is do a bunch of punching and kicking and firing guns. That's it. That's his whole shtick for four movies. Four movies? Three movies? It doesn't matter.
Three movies.
Whatever. They feel like there's a lot more. The fact that they keep giving him acting to do is bad, and they should stop that immediately because he cannot do it. And I know that he's the internet's boyfriend and I know everyone loves him and he seems like a genuinely lovely dude, but he can't act.
No.
And this movie is worse for that.
No, literally watch the very last scene where he's talking to Neil Patrick Harris and Carrie Ann Moss, and he's just, there's two actors in the room. And then there's Keanu Reeves, who's just like, how do you explain his acting style? It's just, it's...
Well, I would describe it as Robert Pattinson in the Twilight movies on Downers. When it goes to slow motion, I wasn't sure whether that was just Keanu or the movie was something was wrong with the movie.
Like, you know, he was processing the lines in his head.
He was just trying to work it out. Now, I know people are getting mad. He seems like a very lovely man. I would love to hang out and have a Coke with him. That's absolutely fine. But he can't act.
No.
And this movie needs him to act, and he's not good at it. And the failing of this movie is many, but he's a big problem with it. And they think he's better than he is. And he's an older man now trying to still do the kind of moves and the kind of physicality that is required for that role. How old's The Matrix now? 20 years old?
No, 1999 was The Matrix.
So more than 20 years old now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have to talk about the cultural touchstone that was The Matrix. The Matrix was like nothing else anyone had seen.
No.
And it introduced, this movie even references that shit. Like, it tries to be so meta. It just is infuriating, but we'll get to that. But the Matrix was such a cultural touchstone. It was like nothing else. It was philosophy and technology and aesthetic all in one movie. And, you know, it was this washed out green sky that, you know, The Matrix was familiar yet completely unique and different when they were in The Matrix. And, you know, the two powerhouses carried that movie. Lawrence Fishburne
was phenomenal as Morpheus, yeah.
And Hugo Weaving is still one of the best character actors alive today.
Yes.
Particularly when he's playing a bad guy.
Yep. He is like no other person. And he's so good, and so is Lawrence Fishburne. They're so good, they have to bring them back
Yeah, from in the worst like, possible way.
Like you had, like they had to show them this is, and that's it's almost like a why would you do that? Because it shows how poor these act. Not, they're a poor ripoff of the of those actors.
It'd be like remaking Back to the Future and asking someone to be Doc and Marty. It's yeah. just unless you do it, you're giving Justin Roiland a chance. Don't bother. But then
showing clips like. Detailed clips of the original movies to compare while you're watching it to this movie.
They've full circle up their own asses. Like yeah. it's just this meta commentary stuff. Dropping Warner Brothers, the name of the studio that made them in the conversation.
But that's bullshit because you know what was going to happen with Warner Brothers is that they kept asking the Wachowskis come back and direct, and they kept saying no. So Warner Brothers released a press release saying we're going to do the fourth Matrix movie without the Wachowskis, and that's what they're referring to. And it's just like, oh, we get it. Yeah. You guys are we understand that you don't want to do this.
Yeah,
you know, great. Yeah, money is the power of you know these movie studios and reboots are all the power of evil, and the money is making the world go around. But all you care about is sequels and reboots. We get it. You understand that you didn't want to do this, but you were kind of forced to do this. So you throw this garbage at us. And I'm sick of watching these analysts going, oh, they're so smart because they did this and they referenced this. And this is how they're folding the old movie into the new and weaving the fabric of whatever, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, you didn't like this movie. Don't try and pretend you like this movie. It's absolute garbage.
It was trying to recapture something. This meta commentary that they tried to pull off, and look, with all respect to Neil Patrick Harris and all respect to Jonathan Groff, who, you know, will always be Christoph in one frame and then the guy from Mindhunter on the other,
yeah,
who I think is actually a very good actor, he's not Hugo Weaving.
And he's trying really hard to be Hugo.
Yeah, he's not a bad guy. I don't think he's a natural bad guy.
No, he's not. He's not. And he wasn't bad, but he was doing a poor Hugo Weaving impersonation.
Neil Patrick Harris can be creepy. I think we've seen that in Gone Girl, where he can carry creepy, but kind of smug villain doesn't suit him.
I strongly disagree. I think Neil Patrick Harris is the best part of this movie.
Oh, see, I hated that.
Oh, see, I loved the... I think what I loved is the juxtaposition between, I say love very loosely because I have to love something about this movie, the juxtaposition between the old architect who was very down the line and he even mentions it in the movie, facts and figures, and he likes, you know, but then to have this kind of cocky, smart-ass analyst who's all about just destroying people's emotions for the sake of energy productivity. That's interesting to me, I think. And I think the way he played that was perfect.
I think you put that against the original Architect, which when that came out, everyone was completely baffled by. And it was just this... I still remember that one of the... It was at Golden Globes or the Oscars or wherever it was that did the parody with Will Ferrell. Like, completely just trampled all over it. But I just found him smarmy without being kind of intelligent or...
I think the opposite. I think he's super intelligent, and the smarminess is the arrogance of the machines, thinking that they know every single situation and what's going to happen. I thought he was the best part of the movie. Honestly,
I disagree. I thought he was woefully miscast, and I just think if you bring someone with gravitas to that role,
but you don't want another architect like you had in the first movie. They're trying to distinguish themselves apart from that movie while being really familiar. Who would you cast?
Who would I cast? The Rock. But my answer is The Rock for everything.
The Rock.
No, I don't know who you bring in.
Jason Bateman?
No, like I don't think you need... why would it be a comedian kind of someone that has comedy but chops? I don't want Mosley looking at me talking, you know...
No, but he has that. He has that. He can be that gravitas, but still be smarmy at the same time. Jason Bateman.
See, I was thinking. I'd think of more like someone like Benedict Cumberbatch, or you know, someone that can where the the lines don't seem like they're a joke. Like, I guess Neil Patrick Harris comes with baggage where it's kind of like, say something funny. But like, yeah. It just didn't land with me. It felt a bit. I mean, I really liked him in Gone Girl. I think he threw off that kind of, he does that creepy vibe real well.
Yeah.
But he kind of seemed a bit campy. Like, it seemed a bit kind of like on the scenery. Yeah. So I want someone with a little bit of gravitas and acting chops maybe to pull that off.
Like Tommy Lee Jones, like someone a bit older and gruff.
I mean, no one, I can't tell the actor who was the architect. I mean, he was very good, but he's not a household name. I don't know that it needs to be a household name to pull that off. I mean, speaking of that, the side characters, I can't remember anyone's name or care anything about those people whatsoever. None of that landed with me at all. Effectively, they've turned it into a love story, which I don't actually think the Matrix ever was. Some people might debate that, but I think the C storyline
was that how I guess the overarching thing was that, you know, all the other old Matrix iterations chose to rebuild the Matrix, but what made Neo different is that he chose love. That's how powerful their relationship was. He chose love over the whole human race. He chose love, and that's what the crux of the story was. But you're right. It didn't feel like a love story.
That's what they've tried to turn this into, some sort of ultimate love story, which I just think is really misguided. Again, I think, you know, when I talked about what sticks in my mind about the original Matrix, it's aesthetic first. Like, it's genuinely amazing looking visuals that we haven't seen before. Even if they recreated that, if they gave me something that I genuinely went, shit, I haven't seen that before. And I think the closest scene, which is kind of a mix of kind of revulsion or horror and something I hadn't seen, is using the people as bombs, that scene where they're going through the cityscape. And people are jumping out of windows and sort of dive bombing them, which immediately gave me flashbacks to watching the live footage of the Twin Towers. That was kind of like a visceral reaction of shit. That's kind of wild in this movie. But then
the horde mode was interesting. The horde mode was interesting, but we've seen it before, like with Train to Busan, and it's very Train to Busan. The horde mode, I know it's a video game, but we play World War Z, the video game, and it's very much like that, like just non-stop people coming at you from all angles. But you are right, the using them as kamikaze devices was definitely unique.
And then my eyes drifted above and I thought, the sky looks normal. Like, it looks like, well, frankly, they look like they're on a back lot somewhere at, you know, Universal Studios or whatever. Again, I mean, a lot of The Matrix was shot in Australia, so it was shot on rooftops and it was shot in the open, but then it was heavily colorized and saturated, and it just looked, it gave you an uneasy feeling. This just feels like every other goddamn movie I've seen in the last 20 years post that. You know, like, we didn't get something unique like Bullet Time, and Bullet Time was uniquely Matrix and then parodied and ripped off like every action movie ever. But It was missing something. It was missing a genuine kind of striking aesthetic, or it couldn't pick a lane in terms of, it felt like a muddled, it didn't have its own kind of signature aesthetic that it should have been going for. Even the sequels are uniquely Matrix sequels in the way that they're shot and the way that they're colorized. I think about the twins in the second Matrix as the villains, the kind of the never stopping, the nemesis of the Matrix. That to me is still visually striking. The Keymaster and those, they're immediately kind of, you know, genuinely represented,
there's set pieces in the Matrix. There's set pieces that you are unforgettable in the Matrix. And in the first one, there's just so many to even think of, like the fight scene downstairs in the train station. That one-on-one fight, they try to recreate that again, and it just feels old.
The training session,
which they did again in this one. But in the second one, you've got the Keymaster and that chase through the freeway, which is unreal. And that's 20 minutes of solid storytelling movie time that no one will ever recreate. In the third one, not so much, but that was obviously the weakest of the Matrix. But and also in the second one, I had the Merovingian fight, which was in his castle.
And we brought back the Merovingian. You know,
well, they kind of I thought they had to like just play fan service to everyone. Like they brought back Niobe. Like, who gives a shit about Jada Pinkett Smith? Like, really, yeah. Who gives a shit about that character? No one was going, what the hell's going on with her in the last 60 years? Nobody cares.
You know, and I'm sitting there thinking about this, and I'm like, okay, we want to go deep meta. What they could have done, I don't know what you think of this, is make Neo think he's Keanu Reeves. So the Matrix reboots, right?
Yeah, right.
And he's suddenly a successful film star.
But he doesn't know why, because he can't act.
Shooting like, he's like John Wick.
Yeah.
And he's shooting John Wick, and then people, and then part of this internet resurgence where he's the internet's boyfriend.
Yeah.
And then you just get like someone turn up and be like, hey, you're actually the one. Come with me if you want to wake up. and then it kind of explains John Wick and stuff and how he can do that. That was a more interesting story than where they went to making. I mean, we already had a Matrix video game and they just forgot that.
And it was
like
good.
They, as an audience, were like, what happened to the Enter the Matrix? We've seen this thing before. Like, this is. I don't know, man. It's awful. It's like there's not a single set piece that I looked at and thought that's a really cool set piece.
I thought the train stuff was cool. Like I love when they went into Horde, like the look of them going into Horde mode, and I really enjoyed the I mean, I obviously bugged you, but the Neil Patrick Harris part where he was in the workshop and he was explaining his smug little plan and everyone was frozen. I really enjoyed the look of that and the way he described things. I just thought it was a really good turn of a bad guy, you know, being the psychologist turning into the analyst. I thought that was a really cool turn. But other than that,
there was a turn coming, and it was the turn was so.
Yeah, it wasn't surprising at all. But I think what this movie is lacking, Shan, is really solid performances.
Yeah, yeah.
The Morpheus character is just fine. He's whatever. I don't know what. I don't really understand
that. He's beads. Half the time he's like ball bearings. You know.
Yeah.
You know.
But like overly colorful fucking costumes that he's wearing. It's just like, why?
The key difference for me is the bad guys in particular in the Matrix in the first one. The dialogue is god awful in this one too. If they're not long winded rants about techno babble bullshit. Every time there's something and Neo's like, what's that? What's that all about? And he's like, oh, it's pyrotechnical bubble wizardry. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. Just stop talking, right? None of those characters mean anything to anyone. They did not land one iota, and not just because they're not Rupert Reed from Blue Healers fame that I was just super excited was in the Matrix because I was a big Blue Healers fan at that point. Shout out to Rupert Reed. Sure you're listening. Hugo Weaving's performance is the Matrix for me. You take Hugo Weaving's performance and Agent Smith out of the first Matrix, it is a very run-of-the-mill, albeit very cool-looking movie, but it's not the same. It doesn't land the same. That driving, overtly menacing, a program that can take over anyone's body, and you see that happen in real time. Once it gets to this end, everyone's overtaking everyone, and there's just who's the good guy, the bad guy? It's a bundle of lots of bodies and machine guns, and pare it back down to a manageable level rather than the thousands of extras, you know. And I know the Matrix, I think it's the second one, has the big Smith verse Neo fight, and there's lots of Smiths, and it's Smith.
That's the second one.
The issues we've got, but that is at least visually striking, something we've never seen before. And he's, yes, it's a lot of people, but it's two people at its heart fighting each other. At the moment, when they storm out of, and they're on the street, and there's just thousands of stuff going on, I was like, who cares?
Yeah.
Bring it right back. The best scenes, you're right, are where Neo's talking to Neil Patrick Harris, or you know, when he's talking to Morpheus, or it's just those small character moments that are better, and it's missing good coherent set pieces. And every time that they're not talking technobabble, it's trash dialogue.
Yeah.
You but know, the moment where Neo goes to fly, they come out of that building, and he's like, any chance you can fly? And he's like, I'm going to try and fly. And he's just like, and they're like, nope. And he goes, nope. And then someone else goes, look over there. And it's just like, what movie have I stumbled into? Where I think about Smith's beautiful kind of almost Shakespearean loathing for the, and the dripping with how hatred, you know, Hugo Weaving performs that with all those great dialogues when he's got, you know, Morpheus in the interrogation room, and then the visual stuff of Thomas's mouth being closed over, you know, the cat and the deja vu cat, all those cool things that I can immediately associate visually with the Matrix are just bleh, just a broad brush, grey, black, bullshit kind of CGI mess in this movie.
But I think what the first Matrix really has as a positive is its world building. You start in our world and then you slowly just pull back the curtain and find out the world of beyond the Matrix in the real world. And I think that's probably the best example of world building in the first movie that I think you can probably think of, because it is explained in such great detail and such great visual detail that you're explaining it to Neo, therefore explaining it to the audience. So you have that beautiful tool of, well, this is what happened. Here's a visual of what happened. And the problem is that you're diving into this fourth movie with three movies of lore, and you're trying to world build again, but you're doing it in the wrong way.
And it also just allows Keanu Reeves to be like, what? Who? You know, like, you know, he doesn't have to do the heavy lifting. You get Lawrence Fishburne and Hugo Weaving to just be like, I'm going to be the deep voice who's going to explain things to you. And, you know, like, he doesn't need to do any lifting at all.
But you are right. The Hugo Weaving, the hatred he has for humans, you can hear it in his voice. And the way he, in that interrogation scene where he touches the sweat of Hugo Weaving, and, you know, he just, the smell, and like the way he says the smell, it's the smell. And like, and just his performance is just beyond. If he didn't win Oscar for that, I don't think he did. But if you're looking for pure acting at its finest thing, you can't. If you show a picture of that, a screenshot of that, everyone knows, can hear him talking in your mind of how good it is.
Yeah, it's menacing and it's memorable. And you can't tell me that Neil Patrick Harris and Jonathan Groff's performance in this is memorable. It didn't give you the feeling. Watching him on, and everything's so iconic, you know, the suit and the glasses and, you know, watching him warp and become someone else, even for a 20 something year old movie, that still kind of stands up. I don't think if you put the two side by side that this looks any better.
No.
That it has any better technical prowess in terms of, fair enough, you can point to Rubber Smith, that's fine, in the second one. But in the first one, it was a constrained budget.
There's some rubbish CGI in the second and third one. Like, you know, him busting out the door from the architect and flying towards Trinity, it looks god-awful. But you take that very first Matrix movie at its core without all the rubber. Don't worry about the second and third one. Just take the very first one and look at those CGI effects. Bullet time, the wire work. I guarantee you it looks as good or better than this movie.
That's because it was done practically, a lot of it. Like, they actually figured out a way to shoot bullet time, you know, with the circle of cameras, and they had all that and the wire work and all of the work that went into the martial arts training that the actors did. You know, you could see the work on the page, but they also had a cohesive visual flair that they wanted to achieve right through the whole movie. You know, I think about the sequence where they're showing him off the Matrix for the first time, the woman in the red dress. And that strike.
Oh, that's such a good scene.
You know, and the way that the camera moves and shapes, and so you're not, you know, and it's a bit naff. I still think Dodge this is a bit naff, you know, as a cool line. It's immediately, recognizable as the Matrix. And, you know, the gun play meant something. This is just guns and bullets. And like, I just, none of it felt cohesive. I never felt a risk, a genuine kind of anxiousness for the character. Whereas whenever Smith was around, you're like, oh shit, Smith's here.
Yeah.
You know, it was missing a villain. And let's not forget too, the first Matrix also has Joe Pantoliano as Cypher, who is also really good as a bad guy, as that secondary bad guy character. And I just, he chews the scenery, but he's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, and I, you care about those characters.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, you get dropped into this movie and you're introduced to fucking, I don't know what her name is, Bugs. And that operator, and you're just like, I don't know you well enough. There's no emotional establishment there. And they drop you in such a confusing way that you're watching a scene from the first Matrix, but it's not Trinity. It's a duplicate of Trinity. And then all of a sudden you've got an Agent Smith chasing you, but then he's kind of Morpheus for some reason. And like, as a casual viewer, you're like, what the fuck am I watching?
I think that's its biggest flaw, is it tried to recreate or recapture and be referential to the original Matrix rather than doing something new. It could have dropped us in this universe again without going back and saying, remember the first movie, remember all this stuff? It's different, but remember? Like, it's the South Park member berries thing. Like, it's the classic way to screw up a reboot or a sequel. And this is what I've been going on about. Long-time listeners of the podcast will know that I hate this stuff because it's got nothing new to say. It's not reinvented for a new age. And they yada-yava over some stuff like, oh, we don't use payphones anymore.
We use mirrors.
Fuck you. Payphones was part of the part.
There was only a certain amount of lines you could use in the Matrix because they were all cut off by the machines. You only had a select few. That's why it was so hard to hide from them. But they went back to, I don't understand why they recast Morpheus. Like, just cut that character fully. Why then there needs to be a Morpheus?
Just drop Keanu Reeves back in it, or don't have Neo in it.
Yeah.
Do a Matrix with a whole new cast. Find a unique story in there, or don't bother.
Well, because, and I think that's the issue, is that they've gone, we need to make a movie for the Matrix, figure it out. Instead of someone going, I've got a really good idea for a Matrix sequel, let's work on that. It's just like, we want to make a movie. We want Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss, and we want Jada Pinkett Smith back. Let's make that happen. And they've gone, okay. And they've hired writers. I'm not sure who the poor bastards were who to write this movie.
It was the Wachowskis. I think it was the Wachowskis again. So,
one of them. It was only characters based on.
Definitely one of the Wachowskis wrote it. Yeah, I checked
Lana directed it, but no, Lana Wachowski's credited as based on the characters created by, and then you've got David Mitchell and Alexander.
Yeah, he was one of the writers.
Yeah, and Alexander Himon. Yeah.
So Lana Wachowski is credited as the first writer, and then those other two. I double checked that on the credits.
Yeah, you are correct, but they're all a writing team. They all wrote Sense8, Cloud Atlas. They all wrote the same. They're a team.
Yeah, and the Wachowskis have done, in my mind, effectively one good movie. I've seen a lot of their stuff, and none of it lands with me.
No.
I mean, I wish I could create something as good as The Matrix and then coast on that for the rest of my career, but I just don't understand why this movie exists. And other than to say it's a shameless cash grab. Now, I also don't know how much COVID affected this. It was shot in the middle of COVID, and they were greatly interrupted. But if this is a cynical cash grab from Warner Brothers, and if what you said is true, they came out and said we're going to make this.
They did, yeah.
And the Wachowskis kind of had to be unwillingly dragged into it and tried to do the best of a bad bunch. I'm almost throw the conspiracy on the table that they tanked it on purpose. Because this is none of the heart and soul of that first movie, and none of the talent that was on display then.
You're 100% right. I just don't know the point of the movie. Like, there's no, it didn't enhance the movie. It didn't enhance the franchise in any way. It didn't add to the story. It's a muddled mess of a movie, and it's just you scratch your head and go, you're right. If it wasn't a cash grab, then what was the point of it? Is it to reboot the franchise? Because obviously their indication is that they're going to make more movies based on the way it ended. So, you know, it's open for a sequel, but
it was always a trilogy. Like, they had that shit written. They released 2 and 3 at the same time. So that it was always going to be that, with maybe some spin-offs. And one of my favorite things in the whole Matrix sphere is the Animatrix. And yeah, I thought there was some fascinating stories in that. There's not some ones that aren't as good, but you know, there was some really fascinating stuff. But I think if you were picking this or a Marvel movie, which is fun and energetic and generally has some decent set pieces in it, we've moved away from this.
But it's going for that, because when the first thing about the Matrix it was one of the first movies that people said, I don't understand it. And they walk out of the movie going, I don't understand it. Please explain it to me. And you know, you've had a few movies since then, like, you know, your Interstellar,
any of Nolan stuff, Inception, all of Nolan stuff.
It's taking a step out of the box. This was the first movie to really do that. To go, what the hell did I just watch? Someone please explain what the hell I'm watching.
On a serious, high level. That had a phenomenal marketing campaign. Like the story of the Matrix, like, what is the Matrix? And that following the white rabbit, that was all that was put out. Mm. And everyone's like, well, what is the Matrix? What is going on? I mean, you know, it's the lexicon that this is, and I don't, you know, I don't want to get into politics again, but people saying that they've been red-pilled or blue-pilled, the Republicans who have woken up, and you know, all the crazy rhetoric that come out of America is predicated on being red-pilled. So, you know, I'm now swallowing the truth. I'm going to find the truth of whatever, you know, the QAnon and all that stuff. That's taken that a whole new lease of life, taking the red pill and waking up. It's moved past a really good movie to be a cultural touchstone. Not only like the whole theory of it, you know, being last living a simulation. There are people who genuinely believe the Matrix is true, like that we are living in a simulation. Like it's kind of taken a whole other life on its hands. But to mine, it's the visual aesthetic of it that I can immediately pick a scene out of the Matrix just because it had a signature. It had a visual flair and a signature for it. This does not have that.
No.
This could be any bullshit movie.
But you look at all the iconic stuff from the first movie, you know, the bullet time, the Matrix look itself, like the way it was just shown to you in that weird green, black background and green code, you know, the wire work, him sewing his mouth shut, the cell phone, that amazing looking cell phone that you couldn't.
How much did you want that cell phone?
Oh, ridiculous. It was a crazy, amazing looking piece of technology that was probably way advanced for its time. The one that flipped down and flipped back open again. The costumes, I just like him, Morpheus going to this outlandish, colorful, ridiculous looking costumes. I'm just not sure what the point of that was.
And the performance was a bit campy too. Like,
yeah,
why was he campy? What?
Because he was trying to get the mix of both. He was trying to be the gravitas of Morpheus, but the menacing of Agent Smith. And it's just like,
Morpheus, like Jonathan Groff is supposed to be the mixture of.
I think that the whole point of the first Morpheus broke is because Neo was trying to mix a code, or he didn't understand what I can't remember what word it was, and he tried to mix those two programs together, and that's what glitched out that character, and that's why it became the new Morpheus, because apparently Morpheus is a mix of half Morpheus, half Agent Smith, and that's why it worked. It's just, it's trying to be too clever, and it's trying to be way, it's trying to go, let's think of a way to confuse the audience and be that weird, please explain it to me movie that everyone was looking for. And it just, it didn't land.
And it ends up being a mess.
Yeah.
It's just a complete and utter mess. It's trying to be too clever by half.
Yeah.
And in the end, you just get a boring... Like, I just tuned out halfway through. It's just like, I can't deal with the technobabble bullshit. In The Matrix, you had enough engagement at that stage. Like, I don't think The Matrix is overly complex as a concept. No. But as it goes on, it's more and more complex.
Yeah. But in the first movie, they kind of yada-yada'd over it. It was like, we have these screens that show us the code and we can hack into here. And it was using words that we understood. Like, it was like we hack and programs and things that we had a general basic understanding of. That when they said we understand the purpose, yeah, it had rules.
It had rules. It had well established and defined rules that if you enter the Matrix and died in the Matrix, that was it. You know, you're dead. If you wanted to exit the Matrix, you had to be woken up. And if you wanted to exit it, you had to go through the phone lines that were in short supply. All of those things made sense. So they were clearly articulated about what was the boundaries of this. And how you would get in and out and that kind of stuff. This is just a mess. Like, you've changed it so that machines and they're all just moving together and like it was just.
Yeah, there was a civil war between machines, and you can travel through mirrors now, and there's, you know, and it's a complete mess. And I kind of agree with you that they tanked it on purpose. They made it convoluted and dull and boring to prove a point. And I think the backlash from that and all the scores and ratings kind of prove that.
I mean, I was expecting nothing, genuinely nothing, because I've been very dim on these remakes for the sake of remakes. And I can't really go genuinely point to a remake and think that there's something I really enjoyed in that. I genuinely can't think of one.
I always point to Dredd as the prime example of a reboot that worked really, really well, but only because the first movie wasn't good, and the next one was. You know, like,
I mean, does that really count? Is that really a reboot?
It is. It's the same. It's the same.
I mean, it's another story within the Dredd universe. They're not retelling the exact same movie. It's using that character, and like, it's not. This is kind of trying to carry on from the originals.
If you're calling it Matrix 4, which is essentially what it is, I see what you're saying there, because, you know, it's not so much it's a soft reboot. It's a continuation of the story.
This is a continuation. This is all the same characters, or most of the same characters, and it expects that you've seen the other movies
in order to have to.
And so, you know, Dredd, it's just a standalone movie. It's, you know, you don't need to have seen anything else. So it's more of a reboot.
I think a really good example of a sequel done properly is The Suicide Squad.
Yeah,
James Gunn took over that, and it's bloody good.
You know, and if I think about my favorite sort of trilogies. My thoughts immediately turned to Back to the Future. Yeah. I don't want to see a new Back to the Future, particularly now. I don't want that. I do not want them to recast, even if they put Tom Holland as Marty McFly. I don't want to see that.
No.
I'm very comfortable going and watching the originals and being quite happy with that. And yeah, it'll look better. The CGI will be better and whatever else. But there's a charm to that. There's a charm to those movies, and I've said it before. I think that the second and third Matrix hurts the first one's.
Oh, 100%.
It's standing, having all that. This one even more so. And if you watch the Matrix as on its own, it's still a visually striking.
But you can phenomenal. What I love about the Matrix is you can watch the first one and stop, and it's still and the story makes sense, and it's just like a guy rebelling against machines. Sure, it indicates it's going to be a sequel, but you could stop and be like, that's a good story, we're done. But but two and three, you have to watch the third one for the second one to make sense. And, you know, there's no reason for this movie other than money. The story was done.
It has no right to exist, and it shouldn't, and I'm really disappointed.
It's like, it's like Toy Story 4. There was no need for that movie. Toy Story 3 wrapped everything up in a neat little bow and it was done. This even more so. There was it was concluded. It was done.
Toy Story 4 is still a cohesive movie that looks visually attractive and is appealing.
But completely unnecessary. And has highlights.
Completely unnecessary, but has highlights. Like, if you're going to make an unnecessary movie, at least try to make it good. And I think you can argue that Toy Story 4 is good. This is just an absolute mess. This is a dumpster fire of a movie.
All these YouTube channels who are trying to defend it and find hidden meaning and find parallels and find... That's great. Analyze the shit out of the meaning behind the movie. But at the end of the day, I don't think I heard anyone say that it was a good movie. They loved analyzing it because they try to put deep meaning in it and they love analyzing the themes and thoughts of the filmmaker and rah, 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 rah. Sure, do what you want. Analyze your heart out. But is it a good movie? Fuck no.
No, it's boring as sin. And if you do love the Matrix movies, I would recommend just not seeing it. Because I just think all it does is make you think about watching the first one again. Because I can't see any probative value or any reason. There's not even a cool set piece to go, if you're just going to watch it, watch that scene. Like the second movie and the highway scene. If you haven't seen the second one, just watch that scene. It's brilliant. It is an art of filmmaking, and then watch the behind the scenes on how they shot it. You know, incredible. There's nothing in here I'd go, gee, how do they do that? Or gee, I'd love to watch that again, even if it's just that part. There's just nothing, but not a single redeeming factor in this.
There's so many shots that were like, remember the first movie? Remember how good it was? Here's a shot that's slightly updated and slightly different, but here it is again for you. But done worse, and then you're constantly reminded that. Like, Ghostbusters. There was winks and there was nods and there was, remember that part of the first movie? Remember that? But it was still trying to sell a cohesive narrative that made sense. Yeah. We didn't think that was a good movie.
Heads and shoulders above this.
Oh, I'd rather watch this every. I'd rather watch bloody Ghostbusters 400 times before I watch this again.
This is one of the worst movies I've seen this year. It is absolutely nonsensical trash fire of a movie that has no redeeming quality and features at all. Normally I can point to a good performance or there's nothing in here I enjoyed. Not a single thing I enjoyed. And what a spectacular waste of money and talent in that room to make this happen. It's a shameless money grab, and I hate it even more so because it's.
You wonder what scripts are sitting on the floor from talented people with a unique story that are sitting on the floor at Warner Brothers that didn't get made, so they can make this rubbish.
It seems like Warner Brothers are the place for shameless cash grabs. Like they've pumped out. Space Jam this year or last year, which also had a whole bunch of nods to other movies in it.
Oh, I hated that movie so much with a passion. Like, I hated it more than this movie, I reckon.
So are we just devoid of ideas now? We're just going to keep going through the same old crap.
Well, maybe. And I think that's what this movie is trying to say. Like, it's trying to say that we're out of ideas and this is what we have to do, but while cashing in.
Just yelling that, having a character actually just say that in a movie without having anything of probity of value to say isn't satire. It's you just whinging.
Yeah. It's you complaining that you have to make a movie. Oh, no, I have to make a multi-million-dollar movie with people that I love. Oh, no, what a horrible day.
Unplug me. Get me out of this. Get me out of this. Unplug me. I'm done.
You're done?
I'm done with this movie. Yeah, unplug me. What are you giving it?
I'm giving it a solid... E minus F.
It's an F for me. It's an absolute failure of a movie. I
love Neil Patrick Harris, so I'm going to say just because Neil Patrick Harris is in it, I'm going to give it an E minus.
It's an F, not even a set piece that I can look at. And I genuinely thought if I was going to get nothing out of it, there'd be a sweet, amazing visual set piece I could point to and say, what a cool shot. You know, there's something to look at there or something new. We've seen some new technology. There's just nothing. There's nothing.
And what a waste of Christina Ricci.
Yeah, what was that all about?
No fucking clue. No idea. I will say, I do love that it cost about $190 million to make this movie. Right? It made $157 million. It lost money.
Yeah. Yeah. Your movie's bad.
It lost $33 million. So your movie's bad. You should feel bad for making it.
And frankly, this is the way we have to send a message as an audience members that we don't want this, because we keep getting these because we keep going to them. And it seems we've stemmed the tide slowly on the Disney live action reboot stuff that we were getting.
Yeah, everyone seemed to kind of wane off that. They were going crazy with those, and now they're kind of non-existent.
So we just got to stop. Even if it's your favorite, going there to see how badly they've ruined it, you know, is a bad reason to do it. Like, if they bring out that Back to the Future 4, I'm not going to see it. I'm just going to flat out refuse to go. You know, I don't know, man. I'm getting more and more cynical about the stuff we're seeing, and I get the, like, streaming to my mind is the place where we're going to start seeing originality, and I'm just going to stop going to the movies.
And it's a sad thought, because everyone loves, I love going to the movies. Like, I went to see Thor Love and Thunder, and nothing really beats that cinema experience, lining up, getting your popcorn and sitting in your seat. But at the end of the day, my TV's pretty bloody big. I can make popcorn at home. I almost would rather just, you know, go to the movies, or in my house, in my pajamas, under a blanket. I can pause at any time. I don't have dickheads talking and clapping at the end of the movies. You know, it's just, and the what I'm seeing in the movie, like, I can't think of the last really, really, really good movie that I saw at the cinemas.
Yeah, I mean, the last great experience we had, I thought, was Endgame.
That was a unique experience based on the circumstances. The movie was great, but I don't think it was one of the greatest movies I've ever seen. Like,
but you were with a bunch of people who were all there for the same purpose, who would come along that journey, that very extensive journey all the way through, and you were seeing the result of thousands and thousands of man hours of kind of effort to get it to that point, full of fan service but beautifully kind of handled.
You're never going to get that experience again.
I remember going to Matrix 2 and 3, or 2. I think 2 came out and 3 was not long after that. They were shot together, but they were
far apart. They came out 6 months apart.
Going to number 2, running to the food court and smashing down sort of buffet-style Chinese food from the food court at Fountain Gate, and then going back and watching it again with a bunch of friends, because everyone was so obsessed with The Matrix and all of, you know, the faux philosophy that came out of that, and then being kind of mildly disappointed about what we saw.
Twice.
Twice. But, you know, it was about going with that particular group of people. Yeah. I don't think that's going to be hard to recapture, and The Matrix 4 is an awful version of that. And I'd love to be able to show that to teenage me and be like, this is where The Matrix ends up. And I'm pretty sure even teenage me would be like, that's crap. That sucks. Don't watch that.
Like, they wouldn't even be impressed by the visuals, because it's just not there.
Well, I just don't think the visuals are in it. They're muddy and they're blurred, and I just don't like it. Anyway, I've got to stop talking about The Matrix. It's making me angry. My blood pressure's rising. That's it. Thank you very much for listening to yet another episode of our show.
I will chime in really quickly. I had an idea through the week that maybe we go back and look at some classic movies with a more modern take. Like, I thought my first one would be The Princess Bride, that Shannon hates with a passion. And I wanted to do it. I'm not sure if that's what people want to listen to, or do they want us to just keep watching modern movies and giving our takes on those? I'm not sure where the podcast needs to go. Like, I'm always happy to record, but what do people want to listen to is beyond me. So if you want Princess Bride esque stuff, go back and look at some classic movies and we kind of pull them apart, or do we go towards the continue to watch, just pick a movie randomly and watch it?
Smash that like button, ring that notification bell.
Yeah, we're not on YouTube.
Subscribe.
Try and let us know, because I mean, I people always, yeah, they came to me, oh, I've got a great idea for the podcast, or you should do this on the podcast. They're like, yeah, but tell me that when I'm looking for ideas, because we have ideas all the time. But
Masterpodcasters at gmail.com.
Yeah.
Just shoot us a, drop us an email. Let us know what movie you'd like us to do. We're more than happy. I've been throwing horror movies quite consistently at Jack just because I enjoy making him watch them. And we'll definitely go and see Jordan Peele's new movie when that comes out. We'll go to the movies and see that, Jake, and see if I can get you into that one.
But do you want us to watch the fucking new Jurassic Park? Like, is that what you want? Is that what you want?
Don't do that to us, people. No, don't do that to us. Like, that'll upset
me. I'm going to watch the Marvel movies, so I can always give you a synopsis on that. But there's fucking 900 people talking about the Marvel movies. Like, what makes our version or take better? Is that we don't give a shit and we'll just tell you exactly how it is rather than we're not looking for sponsors? Skittles, we're still talking to you.
I would look, anything. I'll read an ad for anything. It's I'm completely for sale. After just slamming the Wachowskis for the last hour for taking cash, I'll just aimlessly plug in. But that's it from me. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening, and from Jake.
No, I don't know. Fuck.
Just Mr. Anderson.
Really badly done.
Just terrible. Just he should talk to a reindeer. I want to see the Matrix Frozen crossover. That's what I want. Make it a musical. Do something different, for God's sakes.
I mean, he's an impersonator. A fake.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you the following urgent announcement. You, yes you, put down that oversized bottle of Scrumpy and listen here. Do you like being entertained? Do you like television? Do you cringe at culturally insensitive, sexist, racist, problematic jokes in not quite old enough television shows? Do you like old-timey announcers who keep asking inane rhetorical questions, who go on and on so much that you just want to suck them right in the gusset? Do you like the letter H? Well, do we have the show for you? Built for people who love TV, where three rapscallions dissect two television shows, one old and one not so old, for a probable audience of 1-7. So dust off your flares, jump off your chamber pot, and a third old-timey product joke, it's time for Hardly TV History!